Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com, on today's Indian Wells catch-up.
Cam Nori enters the record books.
Paula Badosa wins the biggest title of her career.
And Grigor Dimitrov gets his groove back.
Kim, we are back. Indian Wells is finished and we have our two new men's and women's singles champions out in the desert. We have Spain's Paula Badosa and, for British fans, very excitingly, we have Britain's Cam Nori as the men's singles champion. And again, these last couple of weeks, the fifth Grand Slam out in the desert has delivered. You know, this has been a tournament, you know, for example, on the men's side, the big three weren't there. And, you know, all the talk was about Medvedev, Tsitsipas, Zverev and Rublev, the so-called new, I guess, Fab Four, and to see how they were doing. And I guess from a British perspective on the women's side as well, we were all talking about Emma Raducanu and how is she going to kind of progress from that, you know, shock US Open win. But we were going in talking about Emma Raducanu and now we have ended in a completely different space. And we are now talking about Britain's Cam Nori. He has been the surprise package of the season, hasn't he?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. He's had a tremendous year. And I don't know what's happening, Joel, because British people are winning big titles. This is insane.
Not named Andy Murray as well.
Yeah, this doesn't normally happen. Although, to be fair, Joe Konta did win, I think, Miami, didn't she, a few seasons back. But this is, you know, very unexpected. Cam's had a great season, got to lots of finals, but has only actually come away with one title this year. So for him to claim only his second ATP title when it to be a Masters 1000 event, and kind of not just any Masters 1000, Indian Wells is that little bit tougher than, you know, your average Masters 1000. So it's just remarkable. And also a weird, quirky numerical fact, both of them were the 21st seeds that won. So Nori and Badosa, both the 21st seeds. Don't think many people would have picked both of them to have walked away with the titles on Sunday.
No, it was both tournaments, really, it was a completely open field. It was there. It was anyone's for the taking. As if you were just in the draw, I think, kind of going on into the tournament, you felt like you had a chance. And, you know, for Cam Nori, yes, his season has been very, very good. But I think even by his own admission, this is beyond his kind of wildest dreams to win a Masters 1000 tournament. But this is the situation we're in. And I think this is, you know, testament to how consistent I think he has been playing across the season, because he is a player I don't think that has any big weapons in his game, but at the same time he doesn't really have any obvious weaknesses, and he's almost kind of asserted this season this sort of wall-like nature, I think, to him and his opponents and to his sort of brand of tennis, I think. And I mean, I was watching some of his matches during the week, and you know, really kind of against, you know, for example, against Schwartzman in the quarterfinals, it was just very clear, I think. A lot of his opponents just don't really know what to do when the ball is just kind of coming back at them. It's a looping forehand. It feels very kind of Rafa-esque, dare I say. It was interesting to hear kind of I think Tim Henman actually describe it like that on commentary. And I do genuinely think at the moment, you know, I don't think he's obviously at the level of Rafa Nadal at his peak, but certainly without kind of Rafa on the scene, Nori really, I think, embodies that level of defense, I think, that Nadal certainly kind of brings to the court.
Yeah, I think comparisons of Rafa can go to a certain extent, but we're not going to get carried away. I know exactly what you mean. Like, Cam's really physically strong and consistent as well. Mm. And I think that's been a really big key thing that he's worked on, and that's allowed him to be so consistent this season. He's right up there with kind of the most match wins on tour. And I think especially in this particular final, you know, he was a set down, and, you know, we saw in his last final in San Diego against Casper Ruud, you know, he kind of got blasted off the court. Mm. And it was just so impressive that although he was down in this one, you know, he came back, he turned it around, stormed through that third set. And I think it's also the manner in which he won, you know, the final over Basilashvili. You know, to be fair, Basilashvili, I think, didn't really have a plan B. He seemed a bit one dimensional. And I think he was definitely, from the word go, you know, a winnable opponent. But, you know, compared to facing someone else in a Masters final. But I was really pleased with how Cam just kind of stuck his head down, got on with it, and, you know, brought it back and just ran away with it at the end.
Yeah, because, I mean, the scoreline was 3-6, 6-4, 6-1. I think that opening set that he dropped was the first time, you know, he was down in the tournament. But as you said, you just feel with Basilashvili, yes, he is known as quite an aggressive player in terms of, you know, from the baseline. A bit flashier, I think, than obviously Cam Norrie, and a bit more attuned, I think, to kind of the highlights reel. But you just felt that the more it went into that match, that, you know, there were going to be errors, there were going to be unforced errors sort of racking up on Basilashvili's side. And that, I think, I really helped kind of Norrie. And, you know, you talk about his consistency, the fact that it was just kind of coming back to him. It was just very, very good. And by the end of it, Basilashvili didn't really have an answer. And I think certainly the court as well helped Norrie this week. It's been quite slow. It's been quite bouncy as well. And, you know, with that heavy topspin that Norrie applies on his forehand, you know, particularly, I think, when he was targeting kind of players' backhands. I, you know, remember that the semi-final against Dimitrov was quite a key strategy kind of for him. But I think the court surface helped. It wasn't too quick, and it was able, his court coverage, I think, was just very exceptional. And wherever he was on court, he didn't really feel kind of off balance and was able to kind of get the, you know, get the most out of what position he kind of found himself in. And again, I think that was one of the other reasons he's done so well this week, was the fact that this court meant that the rallies were going to be extended, and it might have just been a test within that point in terms of who can kind of stay out the longest without kind of committing an error. And that sort of wall-like approach, I think, that Norrie now has to his game has been very, very impressive. And, you know, I think over the season, you know, his game has evolved. You know, I've spoken and been a critic, to be honest, about his double-handed backhand, how I think he needed to get a little bit more kind of purchase on it to not be, I think, which I think was kind of a weakest, maybe, if we looked at Norrie's game kind of 12 months ago. But he has really, really improved. And I think really now he's almost kind of like the, you know, the premier, I think, all court player, because he's a man who can just do it on any court surface, as he's proven this season.
Yeah, I think he's got to finals on all surfaces. Mm. Am I right in thinking? Definitely grass. Yep. And hard. And, you know, he's had a manner of different sort of wins this week. You know, he's had some three setters against like Roberto Bautista Agut, Tommy Paul. And then he's also sort of thrashed opponents like that Schwartzman match, which really, you know, was sort of very eye opening. So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And I think he also has an outside chance of still qualifying for the Turin, you know, end of season ATP finals, yeah, which would definitely not be something anyone would have thought at the start of the season would be a thing.
I mean, are you surprised by that? I mean, he's now the British number one. He overtook Dan Evans this week. He is going to be a top 20 player. And I think, you know, even for some British tennis fans to hear the fact that Cam Norrie is going to be in the top 20 is a bit surprising. You know, I think I would have, yeah, put him in definitely in that sort of 20 to 30 category. But, you know, the fact that his consistency is putting him now in a really kind of high level that, you know, not even, you know, I think Dan Evans hasn't reached. It's very, very impressive. And, you know, the fact that if he could qualify for Turin, I think that would be, again, it would show, I think, it would recognize his consistency across the whole season in terms of, maybe not necessarily at Grand Slams. I think, you know, there's obviously, I think, still work to do there. And I think with a higher ranking, you know, you should, in theory, get a more kind of favourable draw. But certainly on the tour, at these 250s, 500s, and now Masters 1000s events, he seems to be, you know, one of the, you know, he's not he's not necessarily just a dark horse anymore. He could, he's now kind of arguably one of the favourites.
Yeah, and with a higher ranking and better seedings, you know, we should hopefully that should enable you to get to the deeper stages of tournaments with a bit, you know, more ease. And hopefully him, you know, getting into the top 20 will propel Dan Evans to also want to, you know, obviously achieve that big milestone.
I mean, it bodes very well for Davis Cup at the moment. It was,
absolutely.
It was great. I mean, it was quite interesting to hear, you know, Andy Murray was, I think he was a bit like, I don't think I'd get into the Davis Cup team at the moment, you know, given, you know, how solid I think that the team is in terms of singles and doubles. You know, you've got Evans and Norrie for singles, Joe Salisbury, Jamie Murray. It's, you know, it's looking like a very strong team at the moment. And I think that's come, you know, it's come off the back of this, you know, this, I think this surprise success that Norrie has had this season, because again, I don't think anyone was really expecting it. And even when it was sort of happening at the start of the season, we were sort of thinking, oh, it's going to fade out inevitably at some point. But it's just kicked on. And I don't know if you know, his opponents aren't really sure how to kind of combat his game at the moment, but it's certainly working very, very well for him. And in a tournament, I think, where there was no big three and, you know, there was inconsistency from the top players, it felt like if you could just string, you know, a combination of matches together and not let your level dip, then you had a very good chance of winning this tournament. And I think that's exactly what Norrie has done.
Yeah. And, you know, if he's going to be the one to clear up while the others, you know, can't do so, then, well, why not? And I mean, we have had Carl Edmund up in the top 20 before. So, and obviously Carl has struggled a lot with injury. So I just hope Cam can stay fit and healthy and, you know, can make the most of this kind of newfound ranking that he's got.
And also, Kim, he needs to continue wearing the visible sunblock, which I thought was quite funny. I know a lot of players would not do that. And I think some people think it is a bit of a fashion faux pas, but I absolutely love that look with the white block under the eyes. I mean, it was some very punishing conditions at time out in the desert.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of players wearing that visible sunblock because I think it's an important message to say that, yes, we need to protect ourselves. You know, it's really important. So I think if people can see that he's doing it visibly, that's a good message.
He needs to have the Union Jack sunblock in the colours. I'm expecting that next time or at Davis Cup.
Paint.
We need to. But I'm assuming at Wimbledon, you know, it would have to be a strictly all white situation.
I'm sure it would. He also perhaps should keep losing his tennis shoes because that obviously, you know, worked well for him this week. But what is it with British players and their shoes? Because Cam Norrie lost his shoes this week. Andy Murray lost his wedding ring because he'd attached it to his shoes, which he'd left dry under his car overnight.
Gosh,
and then woke up in the morning, shoes weren't there, wedding ring wasn't there. He was posting on social media for help. Obviously, his wife, Kim, was probably not very happy. and eventually he was reunited with the shoes and the ring. But yeah, that was a bit of hoo-ha that was doing the rounds.
I know. It captivated, Kim. It captivated everyone, I think, on tennis Twitter, on social media earlier on in the tournament. Andy Murray, you know, got very serious, didn't it? It was all, you know, lots of kind of pleas out on social media. I think he was at one point going to potentially need to get the police involved. But yeah, fortunately, it turned up. His wedding ring turned up in lost property at his hotel. So I'm glad it had a happy ending. I will say though, Kim, I mean, looking at photos of having his ring on his shoe, I'm just not sure that's a good location to have it. And the fact that he enlightened us to the fact that, you know, he's been in similar situations before where he thinks he's lost his ring, makes you think maybe he should find another place for it. Because I know as a tennis player sort of growing up that if you played for a local club, for example, you might get a tag that you can put on your shoe within your laces. But something like a wedding ring, I'm not sure if it's the right place.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to think of alternatives. He could have a little keepsake box, which he then puts in his bag, or he could wear it around his neck on a chain.
Wear it around my neck, I think. I think that would be, I mean, I guess that could get quite, you might think about it a bit more, but
Do all male players have an issue with, you know, the ring and you know, I'm sure a lot of other players wear their rings, so I don't know. I haven't played tennis with a ring on my finger, so I'm not sure how annoying it would be. Yes, I think listeners, do you have any suggestions for where Andy Murray should store his wedding ring? Because I guess in this particular instance, he just forgot to put it back on. Like, you think that's the first thing he should do when he, you know, he's finished with his practice or whatever, is to re-put the ring back on. But alas, he obviously forgot, and you know.
Just speaking on Murray, because if we do look at his performances on court, they have been building and building over the last few months. And again, he put, he had a very impressive victory. He beat Manarino in the first round, but then came up against Carlos Alcaraz, who was coming off, you know, that whirlwind US Open where, you know, he beat Stefanos Tsitsipas. Did he reach the quarterfinals? I think. You know, he beat Carlos Alcaraz in a very, very impressive and a very war of attrition style match that I think went over 3 hours. There was no cloud cover. It looked really brutally hot. It looked like conditions that, you know, you would say, I think, back in kind of Andy Murray's pub, that he would absolutely relish. And I think what was so fun about that match was, I think actually both competitors were absolutely relishing kind of the occasion. You know, I think, you know, Murray's previously kind of tipped Alcaraz to be a potential future world number one. And Alcaraz was probably kind of looking at Murray in terms of, you know, a legend of the game who's, you know, won, you know, multiple Grand Slam titles. And it was just such a interesting and fun battle to watch. And Murray eventually broke down Alcaraz, who won that opening set. But yeah, very promising signs, I think, for Andy Murray. Another kind of step in the right direction. Yes, he did lose to Sasha Zverev in the following round in straight sets. But again, he's bringing a level of tennis to the court that is making me as a fan a lot more confident in terms of where he can go, particularly, I think, with his ranking and not, you know, not just sort of relying on wild cards at 250s to get by, because I certainly think he's playing now a level of tennis that it commands him to be, you know, not just, I think, automatic direct entry into a main draw, but certainly I think he should be kind of pushing for seedings again, because the level he's showing, I think, is above where his ranking is at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. He just needs to get that little bit further, because he keeps getting quite bad draws, but he's done well to come through, you know, to a certain extent. So, and let's hope he'll figure out the wedding ring situation in the future as well. but let's have a look at what happened elsewhere in the men's side of things at Indian Wells, because like we were saying, you know, we had the top four seeds all going out in the quarterfinals or earlier. So, you know, Rublev, Zverev, Medvedev and Tsitsipas, none of them making it through to the latter stages. I mean, perhaps most pleasing for many fans was Grigor Dimitrov beating Daniil Medvedev. And that's not a snide against Daniil Medvedev, but more a yay, Grigor Dimitrov is back and has had a resurgent week.
I mean, Medvedev was playing really, really well in that match. He was 6-4, 4-1 up. And, you know, from that point, against Grigor Dimitrov this season, you would have just thought, you know, given Medvedev, US Open champion, he would have just kind of walked to victory from that position. But Dimitrov had completely other ideas and came back from a double breakdown in that second set and won through 4-6, 6-4, 6-3. And it was just, yeah, as you said, it was just so pleasing to watch, because, you know, we know Dimitrov has this, you know, we know he has the ability and the talent, but, you know, this season he's shown it very few and far between in terms of his matches. And I think this was his first time. It was the first time he had defeated a top two opponent since 2016. It just shows you how long he's had to wait for a victory against an opponent of the caliber of Medvedev. And it was his first time that he'd got to a Masters 1000 event this season in the quarterfinals. So it was, you know, it was very pleasing to see. I'm loving this sort of renaissance we're having with Grigor Dimitrov, because again, he's such a likable guy on the tour. And although I think, you know, we've not got Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, I think we're always sort of as default already sort of looking forward to, you know, the people the next set of people. Whereas actually, you've got to remember, there are other people as well as part of that generation still playing. And I've firmly put Dimitrov in that category. And again, it was just great to see him, I think, roll back the years with some of the tennis he was playing at Indian Wells.
Yeah, he's one of those players that you always feel missed the boat slightly. So it's nice when he does have a nice result here and there. And he is also one of those players you can never quite rule out, and has always potentially got that possibility in a draw to do something.
I loved his outfit as well. I love that. I mean, I feel like he always has such a strong look on court, and I loved his Nike outfit actually in the desert.
It's a fashion fave, not a faux pas. I mean, we also had Basilashvili, who obviously beat Stefanos Tsitsipas and then made it all the way to the final. Taylor Fritz took out Sasha Zverev. I think that one was a bit ironic, because Zverev, did he try and shush the crowd on match point and then subsequently lost, which I'm sure pleased many people.
I mean, what was quite funny about that was, I think there's been a running theme of the week, and probably one of the, probably to be honest, one of the only kind of negative things about the tournament, because I think, you know, the matches, broadly speaking, across both the men and women's draws were really high quality matches, despite, you know, arguably you might say the lack of star names maybe on the men's side, but we had some really real quality battles. But at the same time, they were being played in front of very sparse crowds at times. And I think that was probably the biggest disappointment as a fan kind of watching it on TV. You know, I don't think it helped that I think that the stadium they play in, that the center court for them is, I think, the second biggest purpose-built tennis stadium in the world. But I don't really think it helped these last couple of weeks, because the fans were just, for whatever reason, whether that was vaccinations or the fact it was in a desert, or the fact there were no star names there, they didn't really come out in full force. And, you know, maybe that helped, you know, these lower ranked players relax a little bit and pull out these kind of upset victories. But yeah, it was quite funny to see kind of Zverev kind of shushing a crowd, which was like 20% full or whatever. Yeah, it was, you know, he'll be obviously disappointed with that. But yeah, great win for Taylor Fritz, and a player who I think, again, has probably seen over the, you know, the American hard court swing, other American players kind of make names for themselves, you know, talking about kind of, you know, going back to the very start, you know, Mackenzie McDonald and Brandon Nakashima. And I think with this, you know, with his performance in Indian Wells, Taylor Fritz certainly made he's made a name for himself again. I think, you know, we've obviously known him for a while, but certainly that was very pleasing, I think, for him to get such a big victory under his belt, taking out Zverev from match point down.
Yeah, and another American, Tommy Paul, beating Rublev as well, and then subsequently then going on to lose to Cam Norrie. So, yeah, I guess perhaps a bit surprising there, Rublev, you know, falling to someone like Tommy Paul. But I think it was a last set tiebreak.
He wanted to focus on the doubles, Kim.
He clearly wanted to focus on the doubles, because Andre Rublev, he got to the doubles final with Aslan Karatsev. They didn't quite go all the way because they lost to John Peers and Palasek. Well, I don't know about Palasek. Is it Philip Palasek, I think, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, Australian men's doubles champions, first in 22 years. So yeah, Rublev, yeah, with his, you know, feat in the Olympics, getting that, was it the bronze, I think, in the mixed doubles?
Yes.
Or the gold in the mixed doubles?
Yes,
no, gold in the mixed doubles, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really impressive from Peers and Palasek. Yeah, for John Peers to become the first, I can't believe that's what happened in 22 years. First Australian man to become a doubles champion at Indian Wells. Very, very impressive stuff. To be honest, though, it was a bit of a, you know, it did kind of go the same way as the, you know, the men's singles competition, in the sense that not really the top seeds kind of living up to their billing. And this sort of opened up opportunities for, well, in Karatsev and Rublev's case, you know, in that, I think in the bottom half, it was kind of an all unseeded semi-final. And, you know, Peers and Palasek, very good players, very good doubles players in their own right. But I think we were sort of expecting, we weren't expecting a you know, a Norrie Basilashvili final. I don't think in the men's doubles we were expecting a Peers Palasek Karatsev Rublev final either.
No, quite. And I don't know what's going on with Mektic and Pavic, but I was, you know, I saw that they lost quite early on, and I was yeah, quite shocked, really. In fact, they lost to Palasek.
What is going on, Kim?
Yeah, I know. Shocking.
No, Joe Salisbury as well. Not really getting there. It was certainly you know, I think on the men's side, it was just a tournament that just had so many quality matches, but a lot of those matches ending in upsets. And I think that's what made it kind of so entertaining for people who did make the trip out there, was that they were getting a lot of, I think they were getting good content for, you know, good value for money, I think, in terms of the matches that were put on for them. But I understand, like, it did look brutally hot out there. I mean, it didn't look like there was a lot of like cloud cover or shade at times on that center court. So I can understand why that might have put off people and why we did see, you know, crowds that I think were a little bit below, I think, maybe what was expected. And maybe the fact that it was in, you know, October as well, different time of the year, it might have also had an impact. So, you know, I think it was, you know, it's been an interesting one. The fact that they were able to kind of reschedule it, I think has been, you know, it's obviously been great. But yeah, I want to get back to the Sunshine Double with the with Miami earlier on in the season. I think we'll be, you know, I think is where it probably should belong. And maybe this tournament has potentially proved that with regards to those small capacity crowds I think we've had across the couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break now, but do join us in the second half where we'll be having a look at Paula Badosa's epic win against Victoria Azarenka, what went wrong for Emma Raducanu in Indian Wells, and also looking ahead at all the draws as we head back to the hard courts of Europe. So do not go anywhere. This is The Passing Shot with Joel and Kim, supported by DownloadTennis.com. And now we are going to move on to looking at the women's singles from Indian Wells, which saw the 21st seed in the women's singles also win the title. This was slightly different fashion. Very, very close match against Victoria Azarenka. Went down to a last set tiebreak, but Paula Badosa has come through to win her second WTA title of the year. And also her career. It's a bit like Norrie as well. He's got his first two titles this year. They're having very similar seasons. And yeah, Badosa edging through in that last set tiebreak against Azarenka, just over 3 hours long. I think it was the longest WTA final of the season. So really, really good match to kind of warm up the crowd that did make it there to see it in person.
Yeah, it was an absolutely fantastic match. I think one of, if not the match of the tour so far on the WTA side. It was just such gripping tennis. It felt like every service game was a battle in its own right. And particularly that first set, when I think it lasted about 80 minutes, both really kind of going for it. And, you know, Badosa edging it in that first set tiebreak, 7-5. For Azarenka then to kind of put that to one side and come back, you know, and take that second set very, very handsomely, you know, 6-2. It was a match that I think sort of very much kind of ebbed and flowed. And that's what I think made it so entertaining. And both players were really bringing some high quality play, particularly, I think, from the back of the court. We know that they are both such great shot makers and love to be, you know, quite aggressive, and hit winners from the back of the court. And again, it just made it such a fascinating, duel. I think it was the first time they had met. And, you know, Badosa, again, one of these players who, maybe I think we've not really heard much of, you know, in the you know, coming into the season, but has certainly made a name for herself this season. You know, I think we watched a bit of her, Kim, at Wimbledon, and you could see, I think, with her game how it's so well suited to, you know, all the different court surfaces. A little bit like Norrie, actually, but obviously she's, I think, has a bit more power in relation to kind of the women's game. And yeah, I think for her, the biggest kind of the biggest reason she won this match was the fact that she was able to kind of take those two tie breaks and really, I think, not let any sort of nerves kind of get the better of her. I think Azarenka actually served for it in that third set tiebreak. So the fact that she was able to kind of play fearless tennis at the right time, I think shows you the level of confidence that she was playing with. And I think the level of how much she, you know, how much she really wanted to win this match, because there were moments where you felt like it was Azarenka's potentially for the taking. You know, after winning that second set 6-2, I was sort of expecting Azarenka to kind of run away with it. But the fact that Badosa kind of fought back, it was a very, very gripping match. And, you know, at the end of it, it was also played in the right spirit, which I think was great. You know, Azarenka's speech as well at the end, it just shows, you know, even though in defeat, she was so gracious, and it was just such a, you know, it was for people who did attend and watch that final, it was just such a fantastic match to watch.
Yeah, I think Azarenka had a slightly better kind of winner to unforced error ratio, I'm sure, from that second set. But at the end of the day, when push come to shove, yeah, in those tie breaks, especially that third set, I think Badosa came out with some lovely winners when it mattered most. So she really went for it. She's also into the top 20, Joel, for the first time. She's gone up to 13 in the world. And funnily enough, quite similar to Cam as well. She's in the potential for the WTA season ending finals as well. But Badosa is in the eighth place at the moment for that. There's still 2 weeks to go until that event in Guadalajara. So we'll see if she actually does get there.
I mean, it was so impressive from Badosa from the whole week. I mean, she had to defeat 4 top 20 players and 3 major Grand Slam champions. So she'd be Azarenka, Kerber, and Krejcikova, who I was looking at a stat earlier about Krejcikova. I swear she just loses to the winner in any tournament she plays with. I feel like she gets quite unlucky in terms of who she faces, because she's another player who's, again, had a very, very strong season. But yeah, for Badosa, it was just very, very impressive, given that, you know, it was her debut as well at Indian Wells. It was the first time she'd ever played here. And, you know, I think at the start of the week, she was talking about how, you know, I think I was reading, you know, she was talking to her boyfriend on the airplane over, and, you know, she was a little bit not confident. She was a little bit, you know, afraid, or, you know, she wasn't really sure what to kind of expect from Indian Wells. But by the end of the, you know, by the end of the competition, yeah, she was just playing fearless tennis. And I think that's what got her over the line against Azarenka, who, again, great to see her, I think, come back and get to a final of a WTA 1000 event, because I think Azarenka this season certainly has blown a lot, Kim, of hot and cold, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, definitely. She has been quite up and down. And but yeah, Badosa as well. Like, this is, I guess, her breakthrough season. You know, she did really well at Roland Garros, where she, I guess, probably became known to many tennis fans for the first time there. And also had some good wins this week over Goff and Yastremska. And Ondrejabor as well. So, but yeah, like a whole host of good names. She's done a Bianca Andreescu, because Andreescu won this title back in 2019 on her debut as well. So 2 debut winners on the trot, and also the first Spanish lady to win the title as well. So something that, you know, Muguruza has not been able to do. Conchita Martinez wasn't able to do. Arantxa Sánchez Vicario. So, you know, making history for Spain as well. And yeah, really nice. Really nice to see her do that for Spanish tennis. Interestingly enough, she actually split from her coach after the Olympics, but she's now back working with a coach she worked with in her childhood. So I wonder if that's been, you know, the critical factor in propelling her to this title.
And just, Kim, talking about Azarenka, another player who seemingly has come out of nowhere and put a little bit of a run together at Indian Wells, getting to the semi-finals before succumbing to Azarenka, Yelena Ostapenko. Where on earth did that come from? That was her first WTA 1000 semi-final in 3 years. She looked at one point like she was actually going to reach the final. She, I think, won that first set against Azarenka. And it took a lot, I think, from Azarenka to kind of steady that ship and put it on the right course to really kind of overcome Ostapenko in her own final set tiebreak. So great to see Yelena Ostapenko get back there. I think you were slightly disappointed, though, because I know you spoke about Shelby Rogers in our predictions episode, potentially to put a little bit of a run together, and she did very well, didn't she? She beat Leila Fernandez, where you know, obviously Fernandez would have been the higher ranked seed. She beat Begu as well. And also coming through Kukova in the first round. So another decent performance as well from Shelby Rogers.
Yeah, I think I had Ondrejabor for the final and Shelby Rogers for the semi-final. Mm. So I didn't do too badly. Yeah, they both reached a round less than I had predicted. So, yeah, I was quite pleased with that. Actually, I felt slightly smug.
I thought it was quite funny. I was watching a bit of Świątek actually earlier in the week, because I felt the first couple of matches from Świątek, I was like, yep, she is going to be winning this like quite easily. She was just ruthlessly going through her opponents. She beat Petra Martic 6-1, 6-3. Then she beat Kudermetova 6-1, 6-love. And then she came up against Ostapenko. And I thought Ostapenko is just not going to be able to live with Świątek. But it was a complete role reversal. And yeah, it was quite surprising to see. And, you know, I think Świątek would be a little bit disappointed given, yeah, how it went from being so ruthless to, yeah, Yelena Ostapenko giving her a bit of a lesson, to be honest with you. Yeah, there's some very kind of pleasing kind of results there, I think, for players who, again, a little bit like Grigor Dimitrov, we've not really seen too much of this season. But again, like on the men's side, we didn't really have the top players, the top seeds really living up to the bill, did we?
No, I mean, just one thing on Ostapenko. She did have quite a good grass court season this year. I think she won Eastbourne. Or did Contivate win Eastbourne? It was one of the two. I think Ostapenko won. but yeah, and I mean, on Jabeur as well, she's now into the top 10. So she, again, continuing to make history. She's the highest ranked Arab tennis player ever in history. So by getting to the semi-final, she's now into the top 10. But yeah, the top seeds, Muguruza was out very early in her first match to Tomljanovic. Simona Halep lost to Saznovic. Pliskova, she definitely did not live up to her number one seed because she lost to Haddad Maia.
Loser.
Yeah. So, I mean, sorry, Kvitova. Sorry, Pliskova. Mm. That is just, I mean, we weren't really maybe expecting her to go that far.
Even by Pliskova's standards, I mean, she's done well in the past at Indian Wells. That was a very, very surprising result to see, to wake up to. I think it was certainly a tournament again where it was opportunities for lower seeded players to make a name for themselves. And just talking about Saznovic, because yes, she did beat Simona Halep, but she also beat Emma Raducanu, because we were again hopefully talking about a Simona Halep versus Emma Raducanu second round match, which had potential, but Saznovic came in and just said absolutely no to all of that. And yeah, I think it was a bit of a reality check, wasn't it, for Emma Raducanu? It was a match where it just passed her by. It was, 6-2, 6-4. I think it was really interesting actually to see the reaction to this match, because I think there were lots of different kind of angles you could kind of look into it. And for me, kind of watching that match, I think it was just kind of a bit clear. I was sort of asking myself, how much tennis has she actually played between the US Open final and this match? Because it felt like she had missed a step a little bit. And I don't think that's any sort of bad thing, but I don't think it was it was certainly a bit of a shock to the system, I think, from the high that she had obviously reached a few weeks before at the US Open.
Yeah, 6-2, 6-4, straight sets by Saznovic. I think Raducanu was a breakup in that second set and then kind of lost the last like four games on the trot. And she just wasn't able to play with the same, freedom, I guess, that she had at Flushing Meadows. And quite understandably so, like there's a lot of pressure and expectation and media attention and the spotlight's on her. And, this is, at the end of the day, this is still like only her fifth tour event level. She's yet to actually win a match on the WTA tour or even play a three set match on the tour. So this is still very, very early days, and it's a bit disappointing that she couldn't even win one match, but actually she can learn so much from every match she plays, whether she loses or wins it. And I don't think that it's really much to worry about.
Yeah, because the one thing I was a bit sort of, because she's, I mean, it feels like she, going into Indian Wells, it looked like her schedule was pretty full, following it in Europe. And, the most recent news we've had is that she's pulled out of Moscow and the Kremlin Cup. So she won't be appearing there. So it feels like it's not gone totally, I think, to plan, since winning the US Open. Yes, we've seen the partnerships and the sponsorships and all the collaborations, but I do hope that her team have got her and are ready to kind of knuckle down in terms of getting back to the grind of the tennis world, because even though she is still very young and inexperienced, I still think it's still a very delicate and I think fragile moment that they'll need to make sure that they guide her through correctly. And I think the fact that she obviously is split with her coach who guided her to the US Open title, Andrew Richardson. I think she's on another trial, I think, with another coach at the moment. It feels like there's a lot of different sort of variables kind of going on, and I think there needs to be a little bit more sort of a flat line, I think, because at the moment it still feels a bit whirlwind, and I don't know if that's sort of translating into potentially not as good results on the tennis court. But I mean, this is one match, this is one event. We know there's plenty more to come. I think that's what's so exciting, the fact that she's such a youngster, you know, she's got her whole kind of career ahead of her. So I think, as you said, losing experiences will be just as valuable as winning experiences as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, quite right. And I think it's quite a lot, you know, as an 18-year-old to have quite a busy schedule. I mean, I know I would be daunted by that. So I think she needs to pick and choose her tournaments wisely. And like you say, you can learn, can't you, from everything, like even just being at the tournaments, not even just the matches, just the whole vibe and experience. Like it's all going to be just learning, learning, learning. So she can have that mindset, which I'm sure she will, because she's very level-headed. So I think, you know, onwards and upwards. And I guess just to round off Indian Wells, Joel, from the women's side of things, we had Elise Mertens and Sue Wei Shea winning the doubles there. Elise Mertens is now back at number one in the doubles ranking. So is Shea at number two. They beat Kudermetova and Rybakina in the doubles final. Most notable, though, was Sue Wei Shea's like dragon or dinosaur hat that she was wearing, which sort of, I mean, I don't know what that's about. I think she said she got it from someone in the physio room who was their birthday and she wanted to wear it. But I mean, yeah, a bit of a laugh there.
Has Halloween come early? I'm not totally sure. Yeah, listeners, just search dragon hat Sue Wei Shea if you want to have a look at it. But I think it does show, you know, they're very likable. They're very relaxed as well, I think. And I think that's what is helping them play such good tennis. And they are such a force in the doubles arena. And she's such a character. Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I feel like that's got to be her Halloween outfit in a few weeks' time. Maybe she's going to play the Transylvania Open and bring it out on when she enters the court.
Quite possibly. I would love to see that. I think it should be. I think she should keep it going. I'd love to see that.
Is it a dragon or is it a dinosaur though?
Well, I've seen various being bandied around on various websites. looking at it, I would go more with the dinosaur, but yeah, it's open to interpretation.
I think it's a dragon.
Well, what do the listeners think? Dragon or dinosaur? Let's find out.
Elise Mertens needs to get a matching one, then tennis life is complete.
It's complete. Oh, there we go. Talking about tournaments this week, Joel, we have got a couple that have started. We've got the Kremlin Cup in Russia, which I've been told Sam Querrey is not playing. Don't want a repeat of that incident last season. I think he'd be too scared to set back foot on Russian soil, seeing as he was so desperate to leave last time. We've also got the European Open in Antwerp and a new tournament for the ladies in Tenerife, which is exciting. Let's begin in Russia with the Kremlin Cup, because we have got, that's actually a mixed event. So we've got the WTA 500 there and the ATP 250. Sabalenka is back after having tested positive for COVID. She's the top seed in the women's event. Muguruza is the second seed. Going on her Instagram about how cold it is in Moscow.
No, she's not
good for Spaniards.
No, she absolutely is not loving the cold there. I think it's the reality check. Yeah, particularly going from Indian Wells, which, as I said, it looked brutally hot at times in that desert heat, all the way to Moscow. I think that's a complete climate change. Hopefully Muguruza, yeah, she can do a little bit better than she did in Indian Wells, which wasn't great for her, but she's the second seed. Sakkari is the third seed as well. So it's going to be an interesting draw. I mean, it is a 500. I think it's a decent draw. Quite a few Russians, as you would expect. I'm looking at, for some reason, Pavlyuchenkova could maybe kind of put a run together in that bottom half. I'd be interested to see how Sabalenka comes out against Tomjanovic, because, you know, Tomjanovic, again, had a very decent upset win in Indian Wells. So she will be full of confidence at the moment. She came through Samsonova today. Onjabor also there, could in that top half. So, yeah, quite an interesting draw. And you've also got Simona Halep. So, yeah, very interesting. I think that top half looks a bit tougher, I think, than the bottom half. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the Russians go, how Simona Halep goes. I mean, she's still, what, coachless? And I'm expecting her to win. I'm hoping that she can win at least one more title, I think, before the end of the season.
And looking at the men's 250 for Moscow, we've got Rublev top seed, Karatsev second seed. So, you know, doubles partners at other opposite ends of the draw in their home event. Obviously, lots of Russian players in there. But we've also got the likes of, you know, Laszlo, Zhere and Krajinovic. So a few Serbians in the midst as well. I mean, just looking at this draw, hard to look beyond really Rublev or Karatsev or perhaps someone like a Marin Cilic coming through.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Karen Khachanov potentially. It feels like potentially a Russian. It could be another a Russian win. I'd love to see a Rublev Karatsev final. Interestingly, Kim, I did look at the doubles draw. They are not playing with each other. Rublev is playing with Khachanov, and then Karatsev is actually taking a wild card into the men's doubles with Richard Muzeyev, and they could potentially, if they both win, they could potentially face each other with different partners in the second round. So that could be quite an interesting one. But another ATP 250 in Moscow. Yeah, I'm expecting a Russian champion. So let's wait and see.
Let's wait and see indeed. And over in Antwerp, we've got the European Open for the men, where Jannik Sinner is the top seed and Diego Schwartzman is the second seed. This is where Andy Murray is playing this week. You know, he won this event, didn't he, 2 years ago, I think?
Yep.
And he's got Francis Tiafoe in the first round, which again is another sort of slightly awkward, tricky first rounder for Andy, as he's, you know, still getting wild cards and having to just deal with whatever happens. I think that's winnable for both. You know, TFO's had some really good wins this year on the tour, but I know that Andy has beaten him as well, I think this year, so certainly could go either way, I think, that one. There's some quite fun matches in the top bit of the draw. A lot of Italians. Could be a Sinner Musetti second round, because Sinner's got a bye, which might be quite a fun match. But yeah, I feel for this one, looking at Jannik Sinner, and I'm looking, yeah, perhaps if TFO can get through Andy Murray, actually, I feel like he could go on a bit of a run. But maybe Andy could.
Yeah, no, I could see that. It's certainly, it feels like a 50-50. We'll find out. I think they're playing, scheduled on tomorrow after work, quite usefully for British fans, around sort of 5:30, 6 p.m. But it's sort of annoying, I think, for Murray. He seems to get these draws that are just not ideal, but you know, we know this is what happens when you take kind of wild cards. And I think he you know, if you look at the bigger picture, I think certainly that bottom half, with, you know, the top two seeds being Garin and Schwartzman, that's the better half, I think, to have landed in. But at the same time, yeah, he's gonna have to kind of bring his best, I think, to kind of get through those, you know, Tiafoe and Schwartzman, who've both been very kind of solid competitors. I mean, I know Schwartzman lost quite easily to Norrie in Indian Wells, but, you know, again, it was quite, I think he had been in a bit of a slump, actually, and for him to progress as far as he did in Indian Wells was definitely a step in the right direction for him. And I think he'll obviously be wanting to kind of push that even further. But I mean, you've got Lloyd Harris, Riley Opelka could be quite a handful in the, you know, on these indoor hard courts. And you've got Botic van der Zandschulp, Kim, unseeded against Popperin, which I think is probably one of the pick of the first round matches. You know, both did quite well at the US Open, so I'd have a bit of an eye on that one as well.
Absolutely. Botic van der Zandschulp, now of mainstream tennis fame. But yes, last but not least, we've got the WTA event in Tenerife, which I think is a new one. Fantastic time to go to Tenerife for a holiday and combine it with some tennis, perhaps. But yeah, Svitolina is headlining this one as the top seed. And then second seed tomorrow is Zidanec. So I feel like that's quite a gulf with Svitolina sort of quite a way ahead in
headline
the rankings.
Act, quite a sizable headline act there. You do think that, looking at this draw, that Svitolina is a heavy favorite, I think. And I think, you know, there is a bit of pressure on her, because she, you know, she hasn't qualified yet for the end of season WTA finals. So, you know, for her, this is a big opportunity, I think, given the draw she's got, to get some points to hopefully, yeah, cement her kind of position there. I think, though, she is in a half that's got, you know, Golubic, Camilla Giorgi, Clara Torsen's got Heather Watson in the first round as well. So, you know, there are some interesting players that she could potentially kind of come up against en route to the final. But certainly you think that Svitolina will be looking at this thinking, I should be getting to the, at least to the final here.
Absolutely. You think this is hers to lose, really. But I do think that someone like Sara Cerebus Tormo, you know, home soil, or Camilla Georgie might do very well as well. So certainly not a given for Svitolina this week. But we shall see. We'll be back next week to round up what happens. You know, how well will Andy Murray do? How will all the Russians get on at home? Will Svitolina win? You know, we'll discuss that next week, Joel, won't we?
Kim, I'm just looking at the Tenerife draw. We could also, very exciting, I don't think this is going to happen, we could have an Alison van Utvand versus Greet Minnen quarterfinal if they both come through kind of two matches. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'd love to see that. Obviously, they're both partners. So I'd love to see them face off against each other in the singles arena. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that progresses in Tenerife, how all the tournaments progress as we move back into Europe and the indoor hard courts. We've got one men's masters event left as well in Paris, and it's all up for grabs in terms of the ATP end of season finals as well as the WTA end of season finals. So listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this Indian Wells catch up. Remember to subscribe to us on your podcasting platform of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Castbox, Stitcher, and all good podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you want to show your support for the show, then why not leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts?
And you can follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at Passing Shot Pod. So do get in touch if you haven't already or you don't follow us. Give us a like and a follow. You can reach us on all those channels, but you can also drop us an email on PassingShotPod@gmail.com or check out our website, www.thepassingshot.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Passing Shot HQ to look back on all of the tournaments in Europe this week on the ATP and WTA tours. How will Andy Murray get on against Francis Tiafoe? Will Elina Svitolina live up to the billing and win in Tenerife? We will soon find out, but I hope you can join us for our next catch up and we will see you again soon.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.